Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello folks, this episode of Luke's English Podcast is sponsored by iTalki, a service that makes it really, really easy to find one-to-one teachers to help you develop your spoken fluency, your grammatical accuracy, your pronunciation. It's very simple. You go onto iTalki, you search through all the different teachers that they have and check out all the details. You can see introductory videos where they talk to you on video. You can schedule cheaper and shorter trial lessons. And when you find the person that's right for you, you can arrange some lessons very, very easily. It's all done through your computer and all done with Skype or similar software. And when you buy some talking time, iTalki will then send you a voucher because you listen to this podcast. Okay. To get the offer, you need to use my URL, which is teacherluke.co.uk/talk, or click an iTalki logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello and welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. This is your regular opportunity to practice your listening and develop your knowledge of British English culture. This is episode 637, and this is the first of a three-part series about quintessentially British things that you might not know about. Now, you might be wondering what the word quintessential means. So this is a word that's often used in front of places, nationalities or cultures. For example, a quintessentially English summer, which I suppose would be a summer where it just rains all the time. He's the quintessential New Yorker. So I suppose that would be like a guy who's sort of street smart and he kind of goes into some kind of deli place and he goes, hey, give me a bagel, you know, hold the mayo or something. And then he's like ordering coffee and walking down the street going, hey, I'm walking here. He's the quintessential New Yorker. Or another example, five signs that you're quintessentially Canadian, which is like one of those articles with a quiz in it to work out just how polite you are. And the more polite you are, the more Canadian you are, basically. So, okay, quintessentially British or quintessentially English is a common one. There are lots of articles and quizzes online to work out if you are quintessentially British, and they all contain typical examples of Britishness, like cups of tea, Mr. Bean, social awkwardness, the weather, and so on. So, quintessential means a typical example of something, a thing which seems to be a perfect, unique example of something specific, like, for example, a food which is uniquely British and is a great example of Britishness. So, what would be quintessentially British food? Well, you'd probably think, well, fish and chips, maybe. As I said, there are plenty of articles about quintessentially British things online, but they always deal with the same tired old stereotypes of Englishness or Britishness that we've heard a million times and don't always just apply to the UK. For example, here's an article from BT, which is British Telecom. It used to be Britain's kind of national telecoms company. Now it's a private company. And for some reason, they've published this thing, which is 25 things that will prove if you're quintessentially English or not. Let's quickly go through this list just to get all the usual stereotypes and cliches out of the way first. Let's see if I can actually access this. Hold on a second. Okay. So 25 things that will prove if you're quintessentially English or not. We'll fly through this list just to get all of the cliches out of the way. Number one, talking about the weather. Oh, it's a miserable day. Oh, it's turned out nice again. Yes, we do talk about the weather a lot. Eating fish and chips. There you go. Number two in the list. I mean, I don't eat it that often. I can't remember the last time I ate fish and chips. Maybe because I live in France. But my brother says he has it maybe once a month, once every couple of weeks. It's normally a sort of Friday evening kind of thing. Number three, indulging in Sunday roasts. Yeah, we do like to have like roast beef, roast chicken, or something like roast lamb on a Sunday afternoon. Putting the kettle on when the going gets tough, which means when things get difficult or tricky, you have a cup of tea in order to just solve all your problems. Number five, drinking copious amounts of tea, basically drinking loads of tea. I don't think we're the only ones. Number six, being great at queuing. We are quite good at queuing, So that often comes up. Number seven, apologizing unnecessarily. For example, when someone bumps into you, oh, sorry, and they say sorry to you and then everything's okay. Number eight, a love of pubs. Yes, we do like to go to the pub. Fancy a pint, you know. Number nine, bacon butties, which is basically bacon, fried bacon in bread of some kind. Like could be just bread, could be a bum. A bum? No. Could be in bread, could be in a bun, you know. Bacon butty is basically like a bacon sandwich. Number 10, keeping a stiff upper lip, which is like keeping your emotions in check at all times. Number 11, being patriotic and proud of where you live, which I think is not something exclusive to the English or the British. I think everyone feels fairly proud of where they live, don't they? Number 12, calling dinner time tea time. Well, some people in the UK do call their dinner time tea time. I think up north especially. Number 13, having a witty sense of humour. Oh, it's British humour. Number 14, preparing for failure every World Cup, which I think is probably fair to say we haven't won anything since 1966. Enjoying a good bargain. Well, everyone enjoys a good bargain, getting a good price for something, I think. Number 16, speaking English when abroad, but using it very loudly and very slowly. Certainly we do when we go abroad and we try and talk to non-native speakers. One of the normal things is just to repeat what you've said, but just say it louder. I think that's fair enough. Number 17, a love of a good moan. So apparently we like complaining. The Australians say that the Brits like to complain a lot. Whinging. They call us whinging poms. Number 18, a fondness for fry-ups. So that's like a sort of Saturday morning or Sunday morning breakfast where you just fry everything. Fried bacon, fried sausage, fried tomato, fried mushrooms, fried black pudding, fried bread. We even fry the bread as well. Enjoying gardening. Well, we are a nation of gardeners, but I'm sure we're not the only ones. A civilized afternoon tea. Yes, we'll drink tea at any time of day, but there is such a thing as the afternoon tea sort of ceremony thing. 21, being overly polite. I feel like we've already had that one. 22, talking about the journey or traffic. It can't just be us, can it? Oh, isn't the traffic terrible? Blah, blah, blah. I'm sure it's not just us. Number 23, dedication to watching a TV soap series for years. Yes, like EastEnders or Coronation Street, probably. Number 24, doing DIY on a bank holiday. DIY is do it yourself. That's like fixing stuff in your own home. So DIY. And I mean, it must be everyone else, right? But we do have bank holidays, these Mondays where it's, you know, a designated public holiday. So it might be a day when you kind of do some stuff at home. And 25, putting on summer clothes and sunglasses at the first glimpse of sunshine. Certainly in the UK, we will jump out into the sunshine and maybe take the T-shirt off and just expose ourselves to as much of those UV rays as possible. Because we, you know, don't get that much sun. So there you go. That's BT.com's 25 things that will prove if you're quintessentially English or not. Let's go back to the page for the episode. So, but in this series of episodes, I wanted to scratch below the surface of British culture a bit and talk about some perhaps less known things. We all know about the cliches, but what if we go a bit deeper and hear from some English people about their favourite aspects of their culture, be it modern pop stuff, history, literature, or geography? So I decided to ask my mum, my dad, and my brother to think of some typically British things for us to talk about on the podcast. So that's what you're going to get. Hopefully some revealing conversation about a diverse range of British cultural items, but also some good recommendations of other stuff that you can check out in your own time, which could help with your English. So let's get started then with this episode with James, my brother. This is quite a long one, but stick with it. I asked him to choose five quintessentially British things. The next two episodes are shorter as we deal with just three things each. But this time it's five, and this is what happened. And you should know that there is some sporadic swearing throughout this conversation, so bear that in mind, depending on who you're listening to this with. Check out the page for this episode on the website to see loads of videos and links for the five things that we talk about. Okay, James.
Hello.
So, have you picked five things?
I have. They're slightly random. I don't know if they're necessarily quintessential or not, although I know that was the idea. They're just things that I think are quite cool or fun or just nice or...
not the usual
Yeah, slightly
cliches.
Slightly different. And they're not really... I haven't given it a huge amount of thought, if I'm completely honest.
Well, listeners, we're not... presenting ourselves as experts here.
I'm certainly not an expert on any of these subjects. They're just little things that I just thought, oh, that would be cool to talk about.
Things that we like and things that we are happy to talk about and things that we would like to share with my listeners.
Yeah, things that deserve a little, oh, that's all I'm hoping for is a, oh.
That's it. As a minimum.
Yeah, as a base level. Just a mild. Just
But above that.
That's quite ambitious, really, even aiming for it.
Even to get a.
A hurt is okay, but. That's quite a big thing.
I think some people will be going. At this point.
That's slightly different.
Really?
That's anticipatory.
Well, some people are anticipating. What are these five things?
Weird now.
Okay, well,
you're twiddling an imaginary moustache. That's
not
one thing.
It's not being weird.
Okay,
twiddling an imaginary moustache and. I can't wait to find. Okay, so we're not presenting ourselves as experts. These are just five things that we'd quite like to talk about that maybe the listeners don't know about and. If they do find out about these things, they could bring joy and pleasure to their lives. And also they could find out a little bit more about, you know, English stuff that's beyond just the usual cliches like fish and chips at Mr.
And
Bean.
I have to admit, I honestly thought these were all British things. And then, because I kind of don't really just see myself as English. I see myself as British, really, I suppose. Although this is a bit of a minefield. But, it's not like I specifically chose English things. They just happen to be.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Well, my remit for you was five British things.
Yeah.
And the five things you've chosen are all actually English things. So it's worth just mentioning that Welsh people, Irish people in Northern Ireland, Scottish people might be thinking, excuse me, pal, they're all English things in an accent that they would have.
I do think of myself as British, but it happened to be that the things I picked were actually English. So we thought, shall we say British things or should we say English things?
I still don't know. I still don't know whether it depends on...
You haven't decided what the episode's called
yet, have
you? I
still don't know what this episode's going to be called. It might be called five quintessentially English things that you might not know about, or it might be five quintessentially British things that you might not know about. Or I might think, if I put the word quintessentially in the title, then that might put people off because they don't know the word, or maybe that will be a reason why, you know? Do you think the word quintessentially is going to make people listen or make people not listen?
Ooh, I think you'll lose as many people as you'll gain, so it evens out.
Okay. It's hard to know, isn't it? You know, it's hard to tell. Certain words, though, tend to attract more attention from an audience. I don't know if quintessentially is one of those ones, but it might be. They might go, this is a big word.
It's not a word I ever use myself, but you hear it a lot on telly and in articles and things, don't you?
Let's start with your first thing.
Okay, my first one is a writer called Alan Moore.
Alan Moore.
Who's most known for writing comics in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to admit, I didn't actually follow him until quite recently.
So you didn't know about Alan Moore because of his comic books?
Not really. I mean, I had read some of them, but I wasn't really a fan as such. I didn't really know much about him until maybe 10 years ago, a bit longer. Between 10 and 15, 20 years ago.
I think it was probably YouTube that...
Quite possibly.
Yeah?
And also friends of mine had mentioned him to me. I'd read Watchmen, which was his most famous comic series, which came out as a book. And I'd also read, what's the Batman one, The Killing Joke, which I was a fan of, but I didn't really follow him wasn't really aware of him.
Okay.
Until a bit more recently.
Can we?
As a person. But he's a comic book writer that actually ended up giving up comics. And he's gone into novels and he does talks and he writes and he's just a general interesting guy.
Okay.
He's actually just done his last comic.
Okay.
Which was a kind of farewell to comics.
Really? His last ever comic?
Yeah, it's like a self-produced kind of, I guess, fairly small run of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Okay. Now, listeners, if you don't know about Alan Moore, you might know some of the films that have been made based on his comic books. And I think it's fair to say that Alan Moore doesn't like almost any of those films.
He always said they weren't designed to be films, they were designed to be comics. Mm-hmm. And although early on, I think he gave up the rights to a lot of his stuff. And when he started to see the results, I think he completely disowned it. I don't know what the legal situation is or the money or whatever. I have no idea. I think he just gave up the rights voluntarily because as a writer in those days, you didn't really own your own characters. You were working for a bigger publisher. This is my understanding. I may be wrong.
Yeah.
And the publisher ultimately owned the rights anyway.
And so if the publisher chose to sell those rights to a film production
yeah,
company...
Yeah, there was very little you could do about it, I believe.
Alan,
but he could have been more involved, but he chose not to be, I think, because he didn't like the medium. He think, you know, which is fair enough.
Can we just be...
And he claims that he's never seen any of the films of his books, which is very strange.
Okay.
To me, I could never do that. I'd be...
too curious.
Too curious.
Okay. Can I just be really clear, just to help those listeners who, you know, obviously, not just those listeners, but all the listeners who don't speak English as a first language. Let's just be really clear about this. So Alan Moore, writer of primarily comic books, but now he's gone into other things like...
Novels.
And also he's a public speaker and just a very interesting person. Let's just have a look at some of his most famous work in comic books. The Watchmen. V for Vendetta, The Ballad of Halo Jones, Swamp Thing. Did he create Swamp Thing? He's created Swamp...
Actually, no, he didn't. He took over the character, I think. Or did he?
Anyway.
I don't know.
Batman.
That's the bit I'm not sure on his early stuff.
He did The Killing Joke, which is a series
famous
of...
kind of graphic novel now.
Graphic novel, a Batman graphic novel. And also From Hell.
Oh, that's amazing. I'd forgotten about that one.
Now...
I have read that.
Almost all of those comics have been turned into films. Listeners, you might know, Watchmen, V for Vendetta. V for Vendetta is like very famous now because of the mask, which is the Guy Fawkes mask. Guy Fawkes being a Catholic, we could call him a terrorist. He has been called a terrorist, a Catholic guy in the 17th century. It was the 17th century, I think, who attempted to blow up the Houses of Parliament and kill the king. And
but it might have been a fit-up.
Maybe. It's hard to tell, but it's a bit of a myth almost now. But Guy Fawkes, yes.
But he got that mask got adopted by the Anonymous movement, is it?
Yeah, so...
Or the hackers or something?
In the comic book, one of the characters wears a mask, a Guy Fawkes mask, and that mask now has been appropriated, yes, by the Anonymous movement.
Or is it Anarchist movement?
It's Anonymous. It's Anonymous.
So he does always joke about the fact that that mask is owned by...
Everyone.
Warner Brothers.
Oh, is it?
Or... one of these big corporations which makes a good profit off everyone they sell.
But the point is that the Anonymous mask you may have seen being worn at protests, like public protests.
Anyway, right? I don't know too much about that side of things, to be honest.
Uh-huh. So what is it then that you like about Alan Moore? Why did you choose him as the first person on your list?
He's just a good writer, and he's really good to watch talk as well. He's a sort of bit of a thinker. He's a bit of a... he's into weird shit, and he's just an interesting dude. He's just a kind of crazy... Well, not crazy. He's very sane. Interesting psychedelic bloke.
Yeah. So, tell us about some of the ideas that he has talked about that have stayed with you.
Well, the first one I would have read was Watchmen, and I don't remember it too well, I'm afraid, but the idea with Watchmen is it's treating superheroes as if they actually were real in the real world.
Okay.
And what would happen. And basically, they'd be politicized.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them would be, like, co-opted by governments, or some of them would be... They'd be asked to take sides. And there'd be all these ethical debates about, should they intervene in world affairs? Should they stand back? Some of them would be so racked with these problem, these ethical problems, they wouldn't be able to act. They'd be sort of impotent.
Mm.
Some of them would, you know, would just sort of have a breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them,
the pressure.
Some of them would be seen as propaganda figures.
Yeah,
and it's just a fascinating way to look at the idea of, well, it's kind of, it's looking at society, I suppose, as well. But it's just saying, okay, if superheroes were real, what would really happen?
So it's a kind of against the idea that, like, to an extent, superhero films, and I'm a fan of the Avengers and all that stuff, but a criticism of those works is that they allow us to kind of put aside a lot of those ethical dilemmas, that they essentially allow us to live out certain fantasies where the characters are...
Yeah, there's just good and evil and...
And the characters are sort of perfect and all-powerful, and it allows us to kind of live out a kind of fantasy, really.
Yeah.
And that it's not really the real world, that it's somehow a bad thing because it doesn't aid reality, the real world that we live in. That they are just pure fantasy, what's the word I'm looking for? Disneyland...
Tropes.
Amusement rides... And yeah, just an escape from reality. So his idea with Watchmen was to, yeah, actually bring superheroes back into the real world, and to show how they would be impotent figures because of all the ethical dilemmas that they'd be
faced. Some of them would, and some of them wouldn't. And this, it would be, yeah, crazy. I don't remember it too clearly.
Okay,
and I haven't seen the film either, so.
Well,
that's the extent of my knowledge.
I think, as we've already said, he's kind of disowned the film versions of his work.
Yeah.
V
for Vendetta. Have you read that?
I've never read V for Vendetta. I saw the film, but I haven't read the comic.
No,
book. I haven't really read many of his books. I think I've started reading
Killing
From Hell.
Joke. I mean, it's worth pointing out that he works with artists. He's not the artist. He's not the guy that does all the drawings and stuff in these comics. He just does the stories.
I'll tell you which ones I have read and that I really enjoyed were the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Which was turned into a film with Sean Connery in it.
Yeah.
But the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen is pretty brutal. And it takes these sort of classic figures from horror literature, like, for example, Dracula, Frankenstein, and others, and sort of puts them in the group together. But they're like, for example, the Invisible Man is a total psychopath and he's horrible. He's an awful, awful person. And it's quite an interesting, violent and horrible set of people. And it's an interesting sort of steampunk kind of adventure.
The Killing Joke I've read, the Batman story, and I don't remember it too well. It's basically the Batman versus the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a kind of a battle of... And the Joker's completely insane. And he's trying to drag Batman down. And it's just like a battle of wills. But it's really nicely drawn. But I think it's this guy called Brian Bolland. Or maybe he just did the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's... I don't know if this is a bit of a spoiler, but it's like a loop.
Yeah, don't spoil the plot.
I just did. It's not a plot spoiler, but if you look at the first and the last frame
of the comic, the
Killing Joke,
yeah,
they're the same.
So it's just, it repeats, history repeats itself.
And there's lots of these spiral motifs throughout. It's kind of like a spiral of madness. Yeah. And just when you get to the end, you realise that's the same frame as you started with.
So
it's a little mind game.
It's a bit like the idea that revenge, you know, just it's the cycle of violence that violence...
I don't know. It
brings forth more violence, and that there's no end to it, that it's just like one thing. Like Batman is a vigilante fighting for revenge, but in doing that, he becomes a monster. And then, you know, it's just sort of like that cycle. But in terms of his interviews, and we're going to move on to point two very soon, in terms of the interviews, because for me, I love listening to Alan Moore talking.
Yeah, he's great, isn't he?
Yeah, and there are lots of really good videos of him on YouTube and also podcast episodes with him.
There's a series the French TV channel did with him that you should link to them all at the mm-hmm. bottom of this, because mm-hmm. they're really interesting ideas, and he talks about how superheroes are kind of a fascist concept, which I don't really understand, but... Mm-hmm. I'll go with him. And he's got all these interesting theories about time. I'm sort of about a quarter of the way, no, maybe a third of his way through his new book, which is called Jerusalem.
How many pages are there in that book?
Too many. It's huge. It's one of the longest books ever written, apparently. There's more than 1,200, 1,300 pages.
And the print is actually very small. It's not like big letters. They're quite
1,289.
1,289 pages. So a very, very, very thick, dense book.
But his theories about time is that time is... he bases this on actual scientific research or mm-hmm. theories, anyway, mm-hmm. scientific theories, that time could be a solid.
A solid like we've got solid, liquid and gas.
Well, everything that's ever happened, right, mm-hmm. is absolutely fixed. It does not change.
That you can't go back and change what's occurred.
Well, what's occurred will always have occurred.
It will always have occurred, yeah.
Yeah, okay. It will always forever have occurred. So it's fixed, absolutely fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Which kind of leads some people to think, well, if the shape of it suggests that the future would be fixed as well.
Okay, yeah.
And that really it's just a massive calculation. And that seen from another angle, you see it as time because of the way where you are in it. If you could step back from that slightly, you'd see you need to be able to see into another dimension, basically, which we can't do.
Pretty crazy deep stuff.
The fourth dimension is time.
Uh-huh.
And in his book, Jerusalem, there's lots of stuff about... It's kind of fun fantasy as well. It's not mm-hmm. too serious. It's written around characters and real people, and it moves from the present time to the past to a kind of another world of above time. Or it's called Upstairs. Yeah, it's deep. It's far out.
Sounds really complicated.
And from that place, you can see time as a solid. I'm really not explaining it very well.
Time as a solid. Okay, all right.
That's just one idea. But let's go on to some other ones.
Tell me about, and this is the last thing we're going to do on Alan Moore before we move on to number two, because time is even though time is a solid.
Yeah, you're right.
It's certainly going
to for us. It's definitely real. It's not real for everyone in the universe.
Yeah, we don't want it to be too much of a solid in this episode.
But watch loads of his videos, basically.
Okay, but I wanted to talk about the idea of magic and art.
Oh yeah. He's like his thing is he's become a magician, and as soon as you say that, you have to actually follow it through, otherwise you can look like a real dick.
If you say you're a magician...
But he means real magician, not just a conjurer, not just a sort of, you know, theatrical magician, but an actual magician.
Not just someone who does card tricks, but someone who does actual, real magic,
Basically, you have to think about what magic means. And that means a combination... Well, you could put it as a lot of things, but one way of looking at it is a combination of, like, words, music, and... casting a spell, making someone feel something different without touching them.
Mm-hmm.
So without touching them, I could give you a piece of paper or play you a bit of music that would change the way you feel
mm-hmm.
and could make you feel uplifted or make you feel unhappy. Or that's kind of what a spell is. And he basically equates magic to being art.
Mm-hmm.
Magic, they used to call it the dark arts or the arts.
Yeah.
And it's just art itself.
Yes.
But you can also apply it to things like advertising. That's a form of magic because it's very cleverly using a combination of many different elements to make you feel something.
And to persuade you to do something.
Yeah,
to compel you to do something without you even realizing you're compelled to do it.
Yeah, and that's pure magic
mm-hmm.
in Alan's book. And the more you think about it, the more you're like, yeah, it's true.
So if you're an artist, you're a magician in a sense. Yeah,
and it's as simple as that, really. Mm-hmm. As soon as you see it like that, you're like, yeah, of course it's magic.
It's a bit like how people used to think of language. People used to think of language as being like magical.
I mean, people used to cast a spell used to mean the same thing as to be able to spell.
To spell words.
So it's like another dimension. You can write. You can express yourself on paper.
Right.
And you can pass that information on and it'll last.
Mm.
Writing a spell is the same as spelling itself.
I see.
So being able to write is like magic.
We could do a whole episode on Alan Moore and his ideas and listening to clips of
him speak. That's just a taster for you. And he's also funny.
He's very funny, yeah.
It wouldn't be any... All of this would be boring if he wasn't funny.
Just two more things. Three more things. What does he look like?
He looks like a wizard.
What? Tell us more.
He's got long, grey, frizzy hair and big beard.
Yep.
Massive grey beard and crazy-looking eyes.
Boggly eyes.
And he kind of stares into the camera sometimes. And I've been to see him lecture thing, and he was really good at that. And he's also got a very friendly sort of Northampton accent.
Which is a very sort
kind of soft northern/Birmingham accent.
Mm, yeah, he's from Northamptonshire.
So it's kind of quite a nice voice to listen to.
Yeah.
And you start to go, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's fantastic.
And you sort of become hypnotised by him.
It's just wonderful to listen to him in that Northamptonshire accent, which, as we said, is a very specific region. It's kind of a mix of sort of, you know, it's northern, but it's Midlands. And
he's kind of spooky, but he's also friendly.
Yeah. He's great. He's absolutely great. I totally agree with you adding him to the list, and I think that the listeners should check out some of his videos. We'll be putting videos on the page for this episode on the website, so you can check them out at your own
convenience.
Thank you. Moving on, then. What have you chosen as British thing number two?
We're going to go with Viz Comic.
Oh, excellent choice. Viz, which is spelled V-I-Z, and it is a comic. Let's go here. Wikipedia. We're using Wikipedia,
folks. We're such professionals here.
But it's information that's available to everybody, so you could also check the Wikipedia page for Viz to find out more. I think that it's
we just want the raw facts, so this will do. We're not going to copy any more what's the word? Content.
I support Wikipedia. I've donated to them twice.
Good lad.
I use Wikipedia. I know that there's all this stuff about, well, you know, some of it's not true, but I find broadly it's quite reliable on most things. And I think it's amazing that we've got this online encyclopedia, which is so... I mean,
it
covers everything. But anyway, Viz, tell us about Viz then, please.
It's a comic book that I became aware of in the maybe the mid to late 80s.
It's an adult's comic book.
Well, it's a comic book that kids would read, whether they were supposed to or not.
But it's
they did. But no, it's not for kids.
Let's be clear. It's for adults. It contains a lot of very
rude. But if you're completely honest, most people do see it when they're a kid, right? Mm-hmm. Or a teenager, young teenager, possibly. Mm-hmm. But they shouldn't, because it's not for kids.
It's very, very rude.
But it's a very rude, but very, very funny British comic.
Yep.
And it's founded in 1979 as a zine, I believe, basically a homemade magazine.
Okay.
This guy started in his bedroom and rapidly did very well. And by the mid-80s, it was selling something like 1 million per issue, 1.2 million in the early 90s, it says here.
Can I just...
And it was published, as a side note, by Felix Dennis, who is a very interesting character, who we could do an episode on.
I'd love to.
As well. He's a poet and a
publisher
and famously worked with, I think, a lot of 60s types. He also made and lost millions. He wrote books about how to get rich. He also blew all of his money on drugs at one point and then started again from scratch.
So he
made his money publishing Kung Fu magazines that came with a free Bruce Lee poster. He saw a gap in the market for Bruce Lee posters.
Yeah. The Felix Dennis is the guy who published Viz magazine.
That's comic. A big tangent.
Yeah, but anyway.
So it was a crude comic in the style of the kids' comics we'd grown up with.
Which were
the Beano and the Dandy.
You used to get the Beano. I used to get the Dandy.
Yeah.
And these were British comic books for kids that were published in the post-war period. And they continued to be published in the 80s and 90s when we read them.
And they were always about gangs of kids getting into trouble. But the punchline would always be them stealing an apple pie or getting a whacking from a newspaper on their ass by their mum.
Mm-hmm.
There was like stock endings to them all. Like,
these were the
getting a massive feed. That was the ultimate goal of all these comics was to get pie and mash, or like bangers and mash, a big plate piled up with food.
Yeah,
because so, it was post-war, but and that was the ultimate thing for a kid back then, was lots of scran.
So we're talking about the comics that were
the precursor to Viz.
So, but these were kids' comics, like the Beano and the Dandy. That's what we're talking about. Yeah. But Viz kind of copied that style.
Yeah,
but they did it in an adult way. Viz is a popular British adult comic magazine founded in 1979 by Chris Donald. It parodies British comics of the post-war period, notably the Beano, and the Dandy, but with vulgar language, toilet humour, black comedy, surreal humour, and generally sexual or violent storylines. It also sends up tabloid newspapers with mockeries of articles and letters pages. It features parody competitions and advertisements for overpriced limited edition tat, which is kind of like, what is tat?
Just junk.
Tat is like the sort of decorative things you'd have in your house, but they're just worthless crap. So they have like fake adverts for example, a decorative plate or something like that. It features, as well as obsessions with
half-forgotten kitsch celebrities.
Wait, you said that too quickly. Say it again.
As well as obsessions with half-forgotten kitsch celebrities from the 1960s to the 1980s. Oh, fucking hell.
Try
it's
again.
Not as easy as it looks, is it?
Go on.
As well as obsessions with half-forgotten kitsch celebrities from the 1960s to the 1980s, such as Shakin' Stevens and Rodney Bewes. Occasionally, it satirises current events and politicians, but has no particular political standpoint.
Okay, right, just how do we get across to...
It's got some of the characters. So when it started, the characters were very crude. So instead of, like... There was always Johnny and his magic this in these comics. There was always something...
Like Johnny and his magic trousers or something.
Yeah, something like that. But in Viz, it was Buster Gonad and his unfeasibly large testicles.
So this is a character, and the thing about him is he had massive testicles.
And he has to carry them around in a wheelbarrow.
They're so big, he has to carry them around in a wheelbarrow.
And he'd get into adventures every week where to save someone like Samir from a burning building, they'd jump down, land on his massive balls... and escape to safety, and they'd all be thanking him at the end. So it's very immature. It's really stupid. But because it was drawn, it was actually often the same artists that drew for the Viz, that drew for the Dandy and the Beano, that you'd get some laughs just out of seeing these sort of fairly stock characters being doing really rude stuff. And it was just childish fun.
Okay, so that's Buster Gonad and his unfeasibly large testicles, who would often be the hero who'd save the day somehow using his massive balls. Are some of the other Viz characters that
I'm going to look up Viz characters because I'm...
Yeah, you're struggling to think.
Struggling.
Well, we've got Sid the Sexist, and we've got... okay, here's a list of Viz characters.
There's Sid the Sexist, who's a sexist and always ends up getting kicked in the bollocks. Roger Melly, the man on the telly, who's basically, what's his name?
Terry Wogan?
Kind of bit of Terry Wogan, but he's more Bill Grundy.
A kind of
sleazy TV presenter who's always smoking and drinking and being sexist, and he doesn't realise he's completely out of order.
So that's basically Jeremy Clarkson, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of Jeremy Clarkson in there. There he is.
If you look at a picture of him...
His catchphrase is, hello, good evening, and bollocks.
Okay. He's not my favourite character, but I don't...
I like him because I like his producer called Tom. Tom's a sort of liberal, glasses-wearing guy with a ponytail, and he's always going... Come on, Tom, it's fine. The ratings will be through the roof. If we get enough custard in, it'll be fine. You know, whatever. And Tom's, like, not into it.
But it's taking the piss out of...
Billy the Fish.
Wait a minute.
That's a good character.
Wait a minute. Roger Melly is basically making fun of cynical television presenters, right?
Yeah. And complete dodgy bastards.
They're really basically. Dodgy bastards, but they've got, like, this... They have an image on TV and...
Cheesy smile and you know, they're just cheesy TV twats.
The glamour of TV, but in the real world, they're horrible bastards.
And they drink loads and gamble loads and stuff.
Okay.
There's Billy the Fish, who's taking the mick out of Roy of the Rovers, which was in The Dandy, was it? Or Eagle, or one of these children's comics. But there's normally a story about, and there was also one called Billy's Boots, which was in Tiger, but these, that I used to read. And that was a story, this is the original children's comics, about a guy who found some magic football boots and he could then play amazing level football.
Okay.
And sometimes there was drama with he'd lost the boots or someone had stolen the boots. Right. And he had to get the boots back. And then the boots had shrunk in the wash and the boots this, the boots that.
Yeah.
So that was went on forever. That was the straight version. The Viz version was Billy the Fish, who was a champion footballer who was also a fish.
So they would spin these stories in the same style as these old-fashioned...
Yeah, well, it's just these ridiculous scenarios. And
Can I just ask you something?
And it was its own world. I mean, they all live in a place called Fulchester, all the Viz characters, which isn't actually a real place, but it's basically Newcastle and a bit of Manchester, maybe, Fulchester.
Okay.
So Billy the Fish plays for Fulchester FC.
Okay.
Roger Melly is on Fulchester television.
Okay. Can I ask you something? Is it just you that's fond of this comic?
It's really popular. But the main thing people say to me when they see it is that, oh, is Viz still going?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going, yeah, it's always going. So it's never stopped going. And they always go, I used to read that. Is it still funny? It's like, yeah, it's brilliant. It never stopped being funny. And the letters pages are very good.
Okay.
Which I've been published in three times.
You've been published in the letters pages three times?
Yeah.
Now James is going to try and remember what his things were. So what? Just tell us what the letters pages are.
Why don't you just print them underneath and people can make up their own?
No, people need to know what the joke is about the letters
pages.
My
first letter was...
No. What is the point of the letters pages? What's the...
Just to be as stupid as possible in as short a space as possible. It's a bit like Twittery, but...
But it's also...
Before Twitter ever existed.
But it's making fun of letters pages in newspapers and magazines where the readers can write in with comments...
Yeah.
About certain things. And usually in these letters pages in normal magazines or newspapers, the comments are very, very sort of serious. And they're making a serious point
about things that they're objecting to in life.
Something they disagree with or something. They're making a very serious point about it. But the Viz letters pages are, they use the same tone. It's quite a serious point being made, but it's something completely ridiculous. But it does also reveal something kind of true as well. It's hard to explain that, but... Gives an example of one of the things.
Okay, one of the ones I got printed was apparently the word dinosaur means terrible lizard. Seems a bit harsh to me because it seems like they were fucking amazing lizards. Certainly better than the small crap ones you get these days.
Right, so it's basically a little joke, isn't it?
Because terrible lizard is the Latin, I believe, for dinosaur.
Is that right?
Well, dinosaur is terrible lizard in Latin. And the joke there is that terrible can also mean rubbish or crap, very good. Can mean, the old meaning of it is like scary scary.
They make you terrified.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
you could also say terrible means
really
awful.
Bad.
Like you see that TV program last night, it was terrible.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was making a joke that terrible lizards isn't right. They sound like fucking brilliant lizards. And they're certainly better than the crap small ones we get these days.
You got one in Viz years ago, back in the 90s. Do you remember?
Well, there was these old adverts for a beer by the makers of Guinness, I believe, which was this very sort of weird, kind of sweetish, kind of bitter.
Was it Caffrey's?
Called Caffrey's. And I never liked it, but the adverts for Caffrey's was that the tagline or the catchphrase for Caffrey's was, Caffrey's, strong words, softly spoken.
And it was sold to the English as this kind of Irish kind
authentic
of
Irish beer.
It's authentic Irish beer.
It wasn't authentic. They just made it up. And it was a kind of slightly foamy, sweetish kind of ale, wasn't it? I don't know what the fuck it was.
It might be based on a type of Irish beer.
Well, maybe it is, but okay, whatever.
But anyway, so it was Caffrey's, strong words, softly spoken.
Which is kind of weird.
Strong words, softly spoken.
So someone's strong words means you're swearing.
Well, strong words could mean...
It's kind of implying a threat.
Or something, yeah. Like what was the average English consumer supposed to think those strong words were in that advert? It was probably like, you know, words of conviction, right? Because like the English might look at the Irish and see them as being poets or seeing them as people with a certain conviction, right? Now, this is just a cliche, and we're just talking about the advertising.
But anyway, so, my take on it was that they should have said strong words, shouted incoherently.
Well, it was your thing was like, you know, did the makers of Caffrey's not, have the makers of Caffrey's not been to an Irish pub recently? Maybe they should change their tagline to Caffrey's strong words shouted incoherently, which is funny because it changes
the meaning of the phrase, because strong words softly spoken is one thing, but strong words shouted incoherently.
Yeah.
Is like,
you fucking cock.
I think this is dodgy territory.
No, it's all right, because they're both stereotypes. The strong word softly spoken is a stereotype of Irish people. And also, the fucking strong words fucking... That's also a stereotype too.
Both
I think
which
it's all right.
Deeply unacceptable.
Yeah. It's not okay to stereotype the Irish.
Another Viz character, Cockney Wanker.
Cockney Wanker.
All right, Wanker. If anyone's ever seen Only Fools and Horses, Cockney Wanker's basically Del Boy, but a bit more realistic.
Okay. Well, let me... Big Vern is one of my
favourites. He speaks rhyming slang and spends his time drinking or selling stolen goods to passers-by from an East End market stall.
Okay. He's a wanker.
Often buys a car, sells it back to the same person for the same amount of money, and then declares the transaction to have been a nice little earner.
Just making the fun of the... The trope of the Cockney.
But they're always lovable Cockneys.
Lovable wheeler dealers, but he's basically an immoral
bastard.
Bastard, yeah.
So they're kind of saying the lovable Cockney's actually a wanker.
Yeah. One of my favourites is Big Vern.
He's brilliant. He's kind of predictable.
Well, what's the.
He's a gangster. He's done a lot of time in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing one last job. And he's not going to let any bastard copper take him alive.
Okay.
The only thing is, it's not one last job. He's just gone to get ice cream with his daughter and his brother-in-law.
So wait, he's a gangster who's been in prison a lot of his life, and he is...
He's not going to do another stretch.
Wait, say it in plain English terms.
He ain't going back to prison.
He's determined not to be caught by the police again.
And he's doing one last job.
Yeah.
Which is something gangsters, you know, say sometimes.
Just one last job.
But no bastard copper's going to take me alive.
Okay, no, I'm not going to get arrested by any police officer.
Do or die.
Okay.
But what he's forgotten is that he's not doing one last job. He's just popped to get some milk from the corner shop.
Okay. And so, for example, let's say in the one I remember is Big Vern goes for goes to a cafe with a friend. Okay, and in Big Vern's mind, he's doing one last job and he's determined not to be arrested.
Well, he's not really. He knows he's going for tea.
Okay.
But he's always in that mind frame.
He's in that mind frame. And because he's a gangster, he's like, he could explode at any moment.
Yeah.
And everything could go wrong. And it could explode into violence and he could get arrested at any time. So, for example, he goes to a cafe for a cup of tea with his friend, and is they get a cup of tea together, and his friend has some sugar, and he goes, "Oh, I've got some sugar here. Do you want some?" And Big Vern goes, "You know, what is it?
Do I want some?
Do I want some?
Do I fucking want some?"
Yeah, which can do you want some can be a threat of violence. It can be like, "Come on, let's have a fight." Do you fucking want some can be fighting talk. So his friend's like, "Oh, I've got some sugar. Do you want some? Do you want fucking want some?" And then
he gets out a gun, blows the guy's head off, and then he blows his own brains out.
Right.
And that happens at the end of every single episode.
Right. He ends up shooting everyone and then killing himself at the end.
Yeah.
Okay. It's pretty dark.
Yeah. So, like, for instance, he'll be in a restaurant and the guy in front of him's going, "Oh, I've got loads of change here. Do you mind if I put this down on the counter? I've just got to get this note out. Yeah, the coppers are here. Yeah, the coppers are here, you fucking grass." Bang, bang.
The coppers are here.
No
mean,
bastard copper's going to take me alive.
But wait, explain the joke, if you would, please.
Well, the coppers are here could mean the copper coins are on the table.
Those are those brown coins. We call them coppers because they're made from copper.
Or it could mean the police are here because police are known as coppers.
Yeah.
So he goes, "Don't worry, Vern, but the coppers are here anyway."
The coppers are here, you grass, meaning...
You'll just have to. There's loads of them online.
A grass is someone who would inform the police.
Yes.
Right. So the in the post office. Oh, the coppers are here. What, you grass? And then he shoots the guy in the post office.
Probably not very funny explaining
well,
it like this.
As ever, explaining a joke is like dissecting a frog. You can learn something from it, but the frog dies in the process. So we're just another example of that.
And they've had some new writers and artists in recently who do one called Drunken Bakers.
Oh, that's my favourite, but it's so dark.
It's so dark. It's just about these two alcoholic bakers that live in a rundown bake shop. What did you call it? Bakery.
Bakery.
And they're just always drinking the cheapest booze they can get their hands on and not managing to fall over, and
it's terrible. It's like
every now and then they could be asked to do some baking and they fuck it up, and then one of them falls over and knocks himself out, or they have a fight.
Yeah, and
just like a horrible descent into alcoholism. Really,
the one
there's
I
nothing
read,
funny about it.
The funny thing is how well
How efficient the portrayal is.
Yeah, how well portrayed the characters are and the stories that are told. And it's pathos, mostly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, pathos is the other side of comedy, you know.
Comedy which
sort of makes you laugh, but pathos kind of can make you feel sad. But because they're both sides of the same coin, sometimes the pathos, it makes you laugh.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just incredibly...
Or it's more like a wince. You may not read it and go, ha, 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 ha. You might read it and go, oh. But there's a chuckle in your voice as well.
But it's because this portrayal of these two drunk bakers is so kind of real, you know?
It's so believable.
Yeah, and sad that these guys are so badly...
so far gone.
...addicted to alcohol that... their lives are just ruined. But, I mean, I don't know how they managed to keep the bakery going.
that's the funny thing.
I mean, they're worse.
There's another one called Hen Cabin, which
Hold
is
on.
Kind of similar.
Hold on a minute. The thing about the drunk bakers is that these guys are just one step away from being on the street level alcoholic.
Somehow, they've still got this baker's shop.
Homeless alcoholics. They're that bad. They're that drunk, you know, where they're drinking in the morning. They're drinking the strongest alcohol they can find. And they're really, really like out of control with their drinking. But they somehow still have this bakery which they're running. And, you know, they often start a comic strip with the best of intentions that they've decided to bake a special kind of bread for the holiday season. But then by the end of the comic strip, it's all gone horribly wrong.
The alcohol's kicked in.
They've started drinking and they are just on the floor, complete disaster, complete mess.
And it's not even funny drunk. It's just like
sad, horrible, bad drunk. The worst kind of alcoholic.
And they look really ill.
We need to move on to the next item.
Well, you can tell there's lots of stuff to read for Viz. I mean, look at the amount of characters here.
He says, looking at the Wikipedia page. So that was Viz, the comic book. I wonder how this is going
it's
for everyone.
It's
going
to be very hard to translate this one.
It could be very difficult. This is like maybe a bridge too far, this episode, where listeners, you're just going to have to trust us on this stuff.
And even if you don't like it, just accept that it's funny to us.
At least this is not just fish and chips and Mr. Bean. You know, we're scratching below the surface a little bit more here.
And also, a lot of people find Viz I mean, I don't read it on the tube.
Because it's quite offensive, isn't it?
It can be. If someone looked over your shoulder, they could be a bit freaked out by it.
It's quite shocking.
I'd say the vast majority of people find it funny. But whether people would actually go into a shop and buy it, I don't know.
But it's very, very edgy and quite disturbing humour.
Yeah, and there's a lot of extremely foul language.
But if that's your cup of tea, then,
then
you will love it. I mean, we know that certain famous people...
And the Viz annuals.
Hold on. Yeah. We know that certain famous public figures loved Viz. Like
David Bowie.
David Bowie famously was photographed on a train reading a copy of Viz.
And he put it in his top 10 or top 20 book lists of all time.
He had a reading list that he published and Viz comic was in there. So David Bowie liked it, so...
And you can get Viz annuals, which are like a hardback book of the year's best Viz stuff. And I'd recommend you can get them on eBay real cheap, secondhand ones. Doesn't matter what the year is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, The recent ones, if you want a bit of political... Actually, they're not political. That's the good thing about them as well.
There's no politics in there, really.
They do take the piss out of politics, but they're not like lefties, if you know what I mean.
It's not really a political agenda.
I think they've tried to keep it non-political because they can see how that could alienate people. Because it's popular with... It's very popular with, like, posh rugby boy types.
Mm-hmm.
There is a certain class of, like, quite well-educated... Hooray Henry, if that's the right word.
Yeah.
Slightly posh lad.
Yeah.
This interferes, but also lots of very working class, not very hugely highly educated people are really into
it. And they make fun of working class people, middle class people, upper class people. They make fun of everyone.
Yeah. I mean, there's a good character called, well, yeah, we haven't got time.
No. So all I'll say, listeners, is if you are in the UK and this sounds appealing to you, then have a look in the magazine shop. For Viz, and you'll see, it will look like a kid's magazine, but it's not.
It's on the top shelf with the porn, usually.
Yeah, up on the top shelf where they keep the pornography. Anyway, let's move on to number three. Something maybe a little more wholesome? I don't know.
It wouldn't be difficult.
Is there anything more wholesome in your list? Is there
anything less wholesome than Viz?
Yeah. Wholesome meaning...
I can't remember what's next. Tell me.
Wholesome meaning sort of, morally clean, you could say.
Should we do the Harrington jacket? Have I got the energy for
that? Yeah, let's do that. Let's keep it snappy. The Harrington jacket.
It's just something that popped into my head because I like the story behind it. There was a...
What is it? What's a Harrington jacket?
It's a type of jacket
okay.
that I think was created in the UK.
It was originally.
And it became... It didn't really... It became named because Elvis wore one.
Hold on.
What? And also... Okay, hang on.
What does it look like?
It's... A sports jacket, basically.
Well, what does that mean?
Begbie wears one in Trainspotting too.
Okay.
My dad wears one.
Because you bought it
kind of
for him.
Sort of fairly high-waisted sports jacket with kind of slightly squared off lapels at the top.
Mm-hmm. And the lining?
And the lining is tartan.
Yeah.
And it's got pockets, small pockets in the front.
With little buttons.
It's kind of a sports jacket, really.
But what's a sports jacket? People are going to be thinking...
Just look at the fucking picture.
I've got time for this. We're supposed to be putting this stuff into words. That's what this is all about. So it's just look at the fucking picture. Or just Google it. Sorry, that's not really the point.
Well, I've said enough, okay?
It's a fairly short jacket,
yes.
But it's a casual sort of jacket.
Yes,
but,
it's a casual jacket.
But you might find them in you know, it's a kind of a style of jacket that you would find in lots of shops, you know, including...
Yeah, they're very, very popular, and they're not copyrighted by a certain company.
Okay.
Everyone makes their own version. You can buy very cheap versions in Camden Market for about 40 quid,
okay.
Or you can buy very expensive ones for about 300 quid or more if you want to.
Okay.
I find interesting about them. They were named the Harrington because people started asking for a jacket that looked like the one a character called Rodney Harrington used to wear in Peyton Place, which was an American soap opera that was shown in the UK. Apparently, this is all before my time.
Mm.
And people used to ask for a Rodney Harrington jacket, and it became the official name of the jacket to just become the Harrington jacket.
Yeah.
And everyone now calls it a Harrington jacket.
It's like very cool jacket, actually.
I think they're a little bit, what's his name?
Mark Kermode.
Mark Kermode West. He's not that cool, but yeah, he's pretty cool.
He's cool.
I like him.
Me too.
What's his name? Bullet. Steve McQueen used to wear one, I'm sure. Velvis used to wear one.
Velvis?
Velvis. Elvis.
Elvis. And
they were very popular with skinheads and mods and that.
If you think of James Dean, like an image of James Dean looking extremely cool, he might be wearing a Harrington
jacket.
But
I have a feeling that they're probably kind of a bit of Italian styling in there. Although apparently they're a golf...
Yeah.
They're a golf jacket.
Originally it was designed as a golfing jacket, but then it was... Somehow it
Barracuda, apparently, according to what we read earlier, made the first one, but I don't know if that's true.
But potted history. So first designed in the UK in like the 30s as a golfing jacket, a casual sort of short golfing jacket.
Was it the 30s that early?
Yeah.
Later than that?
Yeah, no, it's
33.
Are
you sure?
Let me check what I saw before.
But anyway, lots of...
Hold on a minute. Don't just anyway me when I'm in the middle of something. You wanted to know when it was first designed?
I was just going to fill in while you were looking
it up. Hold on. No, I'm quick. It was claimed to be made in the 30s. by British clothing company Barracuda.
The Rodney Harrington name wouldn't have come until the 50s.
Yes. So the jacket, designed in the UK originally, made its way to the USA, and then it found its way into American films. So James Dean was seen wearing them.
Yeah, Rodney Harrington.
Rodney Harrington in that show, Peyton Place, but also Steve McQueen, as you mentioned. Yeah. Elvis.
Yeah.
In which film was it?
Don't know.
All right. it doesn't matter. Well, that's it.
Let's call it. You can get them in different colours. They look cool.
But that's not the end of the story, because they also became part of the mod style, which is a quintessentially English thing.
Yes.
Mod. I mean, I've done an episode about mods before with comedian Ian Moore, who is a mod. He wears the full-on mod clothing at all times.
Yeah.
And so the Harrington jacket is part of that mod look. It's a sort of more casual mod look.
It's a timeless classic.
It's a timeless classic.
It's a timeless jacket. Modern classic.
And you bought one for Dad because you thought that
he would suit him for some reason.
And it does, doesn't
it? And it suits him brilliantly.
Yeah. So you bought
suits some people's body shape quite well.
You bought him a black one with a sort of red tartan lining.
Yeah.
And he was apparently on a train at one point, sometime, and he was standing there with his Harrington jacket on, bought for him by you. And some girls came up to him, some kind of like young girls came up to him and said, "We really like your jacket. You look really cool." They actually did that.
I know about that. Yeah.
Should probably bring him in and to tell the story.
Well, there you go. Okay. Let's crack on.
Let's crack on, shall we, James?
We're not using that word ever again.
No, we are, because this is what people say. My listeners need to know this.
Let's get on with it, shall we?
Right. Point four, then. What's your fourth British thing?
Oh.
You're going to ask me to remind you what it is now, aren't you? You've got two other things. What are those other things?
Jake Arnott was one
Jake
of them.
Jake Arnott. Books by Jake Arnott. Okay.
Yeah, who's an author fairly... I don't know why I chose him.
Jake Arnott. That's not like a grammatically incorrect sentence. No. It's his name.
He's a British novelist from, like, now.
From now? A current British novelist.
And he just wrote some books that I like that were quite British or English.
Can I just spell the name for everyone? Jake, J-A-K-E, Arnott, A-R-N-O-T-T, Jake Arnott. Okay, so British novelist who...
And he writes gangster books, but they're good ones, though.
Gangster books.
Fictionalised versions of people. Maybe he's incorporated some real characters and kind of fictionalised them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So probably the best one is The Long Firm.
Mm-hmm.
There is a couple of TV adaptations of this, I think.
Okay.
But I wouldn't bother because they're distracting. I prefer the book.
Yeah, the books are really good. The Long Firm, He Kills Coppers, I think are the two ones I've read.
Yeah, they're probably the best two.
Okay.
The Long Firm is about Harry Stark, so I think is based on these Cray twins.
Famous East End gangsters from the 1960s. There was a film made about them starring...
Although...
What's his name?
Tom Hardy.
Yes, Tom Hardy, exactly.
Yeah, but this is... I actually got that wrong.
But anyway...
It's not about the Cray twins, but it's during that period.
The point is that you mentioned the Cray twins, and my listeners might not know who the Cray twins are unless they realise that Tom Hardy played both of the Cray twins in a recent film. I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, this book, The Long Firm, written by Jake Arnott, is about a gangster who's similar to the Cray twins at the same period in the 1960s.
And I wouldn't normally read books about gangsters because that's a bit crap. But it's just these books are so well written. The Long Firm's really good.
What do you like about it? Why are they good?
It puts you in the person's place quite well. Some people, when they're writing, you're very aware of the writing, and sometimes it feels a bit clunky. Sometimes you can feel the author's hand in there a bit too much.
Other writers.
Yeah.
But with this,
I felt the writing fitted the characters very well. It never felt like he was trying too hard. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was flowing...
Quite naturally.
Naturally. His use of... It sounds weird in a book, but his use of music is very good.
His references to music.
And the right... You can just... It's like... you can picture the scene in your head because you can see, you can hear the music. You know where he's talking about. If you know London, you know the street he's talking about. Mm-hmm. Possibly, it's just very well made fiction, and yeah. It's not overly ambitious. He's not trying to rewrite his. You know, what am I trying to say?
He's not trying to talk about the meaning of life.
No, not necessarily. And it's just gets it just right, really.
Okay. But it's very, very good pulp
fiction
genre crime fiction. Yeah. So if we go back to the original, the first book that he published in 1999, The Long Firm, yeah, you get this cast of different characters and the story is told from the points of view of these different characters. And
that some of them are real people, like Jack the Hack McVitie, who was a real gangster who was around at that time in the 60s. And he's a real guy and... Jake Arnott has taken his story and the facts and woven fiction around that and tried to work out what this guy might have been like based on what he knew about him.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't say too much, but the Jack the Hats, each character has their own chapter in The Long Firm. So there'd be a chapter written from the point of view of everyone around the main character, Harry Starks.
Mm.
And I think Harry gets his own chapter, but I'm not entirely sure. But they're all people that associate with him.
Mm.
One of them's a showgirl who's basically Barbara Windsor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Who was a famous film star in the UK and England in the 60s.
Ended up in EastEnders, the soap opera.
Yep. But the Jack the Hat episode is very, very good. Jack the Hat chapter.
Yeah, and the thing I like about it is that it's kind of, yeah, these gangster tales in London in the 60s, but we also get a bit of history in there in the way that you get the sense that the culture is changing at the time, and it goes from the sort of mid-60s through to the late 60s, and so you get that sort of like the whole kind of psychedelic era coming in, and like the hippies it's just an interesting
interesting slice of time and place.
Yeah.
And the second book is set slightly after that, and mm-hmm. the third book is set slightly after that in the 70s. So you can read the first three or four books kind of as a group.
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like the kind of thing you might like.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Some book recommendations. And I do recommend reading The Long Firm, certainly. Give it a try. And He Kills Coppers is, I think, just as good. And that's the second one. So check out Jake Arnott if that sounds like your cup of tea. If you want to read a sort of a series of crime stories set in
London.
In London in the 60s, then check out The Long Firm by Jake Arnott.
I can't remember what my last thing was.
It's The Fast Show. So your fifth thing, James, your fifth thing
is a comedy series called The Fast Show.
When was The Fast Show on television in the UK?
The 90s.
Yes. And what is...
Basically all of the 90s, wasn't it?
No. It started in 1996.
1994.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. It started in 1994.
The Fast Show. So...
Written by... And performed by Paul Whitehouse, Charlie Higson, Simon Day, Mark Williams, John Thompson, Arabella Weir, and Carolina Hearn.
So this group
along with other cast members.
This group of British comedians, funny people.
And Paul Whitehouse used to write for a guy called Harry Enfield and perform mm-hmm. with him.
So did Charlie Higson.
Harry Enfield was very, very popular character comic in the 80s and early 90s. And... he did lots of characters that became common,
sort of household.
Entered the popular consciousness and became household names,
mm-hmm.
Satirizing the times.
Satirizing certain.
Quite bluntly. It wasn't exactly subtle humor, Harry Enfield.
Satirizing certain types of person that you might meet.
Certain types of people. So you'd get loads of money, who was a yuppie. Who had loads of money and used to just basically brag, and he was an obnoxious.
I've got loads of money.
And he was satirizing the kind of East End type of geezers that went into work in the city in the 80s, and some of them got lots of money
mm-hmm.
and a kind of new rich of that time.
But they were horrible.
And the teenager character, Kevin the teenager,
yeah.
who was basically me, when I was a teenager.
When you were a teenager, and even after you were a teenager, well, you know, like, Kevin, I hate you, which is Kevin the teenager. I mean, you know, it's you weren't as bad as that.
Nearly.
Usually.
Anyway, so some of those writers and some of their friends got together and started a thing called The Fast Show, which was, the idea was it would be very fast-paced. They often thought that sketches went on too long and had too much setup, and they had to work round to some sort of inevitable punchline.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought the whole thing was a bit contrived, and you wasted a lot of time setting things up and then kind of breaking them down again and mm-hmm. for a punchline at the end. And it would be much more fun to have recurring characters that you could introduce. They do the funny bit and then they get off, without the need for the whole structure of, here's a shop, here's a man walking into the shop, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you could just cut straight to the funny stuff. I think that was their idea.
And what happened as a result is that you got all of these recurring characters, as you said, and each recurring character had their catchphrase.
I think it was actually quite inspired by Viz, if I'm honest. I mean, it's got to be, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, Viz has been going for many, many years.
Yeah.
And although it's a comic book, so it's kind of alternative and a bit underground in a way. And so, yeah, I'm sure that Viz has been very influential.
But these guys, they were just brilliant actors, a lot of them, which was really a big part of it. You'd believe in them. And
They all had their own catchphrases. And these catchphrases sort of became part of the popular vernacular. Like, people started using these catchphrases in everyday life.
There were certain archetypes,
mm-hmm.
Which were kind of type of people that everyone would recognize. Like the guy, you go up to the pub and you're about to sit down and someone goes, "Someone's sitting there, mate."
Yeah, so that's one of them. "Someone's sitting there, mate." "Someone is sitting there, mate." "Someone's sitting there, mate." So it's when you go to sit down somewhere and there's always some geezer who's like, "Someone's sitting there, mate." And so there's one sketch where...
And another catchphrase is "hold the bells," which is when someone's playing the fruit machine.
The gambling machine.
Kind of backseat driving.
Wait, when someone is playing the gambling machine in the pub, because pubs always used to have these gambling machines where you have to press the buttons.
A fruit machine,
and the things spin round and you're trying to get 3 lemons or something in order to get the money. And there's always some geezer in the pub who is an expert on the fruit machine, although he's never playing it. He's just hanging around. And when you start playing it or someone, he's like, "Oh, all right, mate, now I'll tell you what you need to do. Hold the bells." Like, hold the... It's very hard to explain, but he's always like...
The symbol would be of a bell.
Yeah.
And his idea would always hold the bells, you know, like the winning strategy.
Yeah, he's always trying to give you the winning strategy. And he's like, "Hold on, mate." And he takes over and he does this. And he always loses the person their money. That's the joke.
Yeah, and he'd have a lot to say and he'd be a real geezer. And just hilarious because he was just a very believable character.
Very typical.
That everyone's seen.
Yeah.
"Hold the bells, mate. Go on, hold them 2 bells. Go on, let's just start. Just going to pay out a mint here. Right, exchange that for a nudge. Come out of the way. That third one drops right in. £3.20. Oh, ain't come in, that's weird.
Tied a win there, £2.
Yeah, it should have paid out, especially after the cherry sequence."
"Well, it didn't."
"Don't blame me, mate. I'm only trying to help. Blame an idle leisure. They're making all the dough, aren't they, eh?" "Oi, mate, one on a black in this pub. Oi, mate. Hold the bells." "No,
And they got the clothing right as well. They showed a good attention to detail and good. And it wasn't like mocking these people. It was almost affectionate in a way because they were so spot on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you knew the guy had been in the pub with this guy to get it that accurate.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some of them were just really stupid, like this guy called Bob Fleming, who was a nature TV presenter. And he'd be presenting his, like, nature program in this sort of, like, voice. And then he'd just, get a slight cough in his throat. And he goes, "Sorry, don't mind. Sorry about my cough. I'll carry on. Shall we do that again, Dave?" And then we'd carry on coughing.
He'd just have a coughing fit. But the funny thing is that you'd be waiting for when the coughing fit would begin. So, I don't know, what was the show called?
Country Matters.
Welcome to Country Matters with Bob Fleming. Today we'll be looking at the ancient craft of barrel making. And then he just like start coughing more and more until eventually he broke down into a full-on.
And his voice was that kind of crackly voice, you kind of
crackly
like
country voice. And then like he'd start coughing a little bit, and then eventually he'd just be going. For some reason, it was very funny watching.
And he wouldn't really think that that was that weird. He was like, carry on.
Yeah.
Or he got, I think I might have coughed a bit during that, Fred. Shall we? Do we need to retake that, or should we be all right?
You know, just pretty basic, but very, very funny and sweet. Like, the characters were cute and
adorable. You weren't laughing at them because you liked them.
Yeah, and there's just so many of these characters. Like, what are some of the catchphrases that
Chris
you think?
The Crafty Cockney.
Chris the Crafty Cockney.
He was like, another geezer. He's a little bit wee. I'll nick it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit wee, a little bit wee. You know what I mean? I'm a geezer. I'll nick it. So there's a scene where there's like a middle class, quite posh woman in the train station.
The thing is with Chris the Crafty Cockney, he's an incredibly honest thief.
Yes.
So he'll go, oh, you don't leave me around an empty unlocked door, mate. I'll be right in. Have your TV away in no time. You do not want to trust me, mate. I'm dodgy. I'm a geezer.
I will nick it. I am a criminal. I'm a thief. I'll steal it. So the thing is, there's quite a posh woman in a train station, and she's got her luggage, and she's like checking the times of the trains, and she needs to do something. She needs to quickly go and get her daughter from the toilet or something.
Yeah, something.
And she says, excuse me, would you mind just keeping an eye on my luggage?
He's like, oh, you don't.
Wait a minute. I have to go and get my daughter from the toilet. And the character goes, oh, you don't want to leave me with your luggage, darling, because I'm a thief, right? I'm a geezer. I'm a little bit wee. I'm a little bit woo. I'll just nick them.
I'm dodgy.
I'll steal them. And she's like, ha, ha, ha. Well, if you don't mind.
You're so funny.
If you don't mind. He's like, you don't understand, darling. I'm a thief. I'll steal them. And I'm a bit wee. I'm a bit woo. That became a famous. He's a little bit wee. He's a little bit woo. Yeah, that was one of them.
Yeah.
Excuse me, you couldn't watch my bags for a second, could you? It's just that my little girl's desperate to go to the lavatory and I can't manage it with the bags.
You're having a laugh, darling. Hey, you couldn't trust me with them, girl. I'll just nick them. No, I will nick them. I'm a little bit dodgy, you know what I mean? A bit fly. No, look, I'm a geezer. I'm a geezer. I will nick them. I'll nick anything.
I won't be a second. Thanks very much.
There's just loads and loads of these characters, and they were almost all of them were fantastic. Competitive Dad. Competitive Dad was...
That was one of those ones that was a little bit uncomfortable because it was so real.
Yeah. So basically, Competitive Dad was a posh father who would be playing some kind of game or maybe a sport with his children, but he would always try and beat his children. He was so competitive that he would always win in whatever he was playing with his children. So he's playing like football with his son in the park.
Come along, Toby.
We'll place the goalposts over here. And you can be the goalkeeper, and let's practice penalties, okay? And he puts the ball down, and he tries his absolute best to score a goal against Toby every time. And the ball, you know, he scores a goal.
And he hammers the ball home, like,
as
really hard.
As possible.
The Toby's, like, trying to get the ball, just can't get anywhere near it.
Because he's nine.
And then the dad's going, yes!
So that's Competitive Dad.
The Fat Sweaty Coppers.
Yeah,
which is like a TV show. Like there's one called The Bill, or everyone's seen cop TV shows, but they're just ridiculously fat and sweaty,
and
they're in the car just eating mounds of cake and pies and lager.
Yeah, and there's what you know,
which is funny because it's true.
The funny one is that these two fat coppers are banging on the door of a shop. Come on, Nicky, we know you're in there. Don't be a fool, Nicky. Slamming on the door, and then it pans back, and you realise that they're slamming on the door of a kebab shop, which is closed, and they just want to have kebabs. You know, I'll get my coat.
Just this Brummy guy that would walk into any situation and say the worst thing possible. Everyone would just stare at him and he'd just go, I'll get my coat.
I'll get my coat.
Meaning I'm going to leave now.
Yeah.
And that would take about 5 seconds as one of those sketches.
I can't think of an example of "I'll get me coat," but "I'll get my coat" just became a catchphrase for "I've said an inappropriate thing," and yeah. I'm going to leave now. Or it just means I've acknowledged that I've said something inappropriate. I'll get me coat.
There was Rolly Birkin QC.
Yeah.
Who was an incredibly posh or sort of Etonian, I don't know, what would you call it, public schooly?
Yeah.
But really, really old guy.
Like probably an aristocrat.
Beyond posh.
Yeah.
Aristocratic old guy sitting in a country club. Sitting with a really heavily boozed face.
Sitting in a leather armchair next to a fire in probably
a big glass of whiskey.
Probably in some gentleman's club with a glass of brandy.
And
no
he's
doubt,
one of those people, they do exist, who are so incredibly posh that you can't actually understand a word they're saying, and it just turns into just noise.
And she had incredibly long arms.
Like maybe an ex-judge.
Yeah.
Well, he is an ex-judge. He's a QC.
Yeah. So
yeah, my cousin's a QC. So he'll be like, you'll only hear 1 in 10 words he says. So go on.
So the thing is, like, so the camera pans towards him.
Slowly.
And it's just this old drunk man with a red nose. He's very, very posh, sitting in a leather armchair in a very, very posh gentleman's club next to the fire. And he's just talking, you know, just talking. And maybe there's someone else there in another armchair. But he's just, you know, talking and making no sense at all. And you can't understand anything he says except some little words that come out or some phrases that come out. So he's going, you know, and I was very badly burned, and you know, I smack my forehead on the mantelpiece, and she had incredibly long arms, and then at the end of every story, he goes, well, you know, of course, I was very, very drunk. That's the end of every story he tells, and that became a catchphrase as well. Of like, I was very, very drunk.
Who was a big fan of that character?
Johnny Depp.
Obviously, you know, you deal with such a crashing blur, like, no, take it anywhere. But I remember the time there was a firework display in the village. As long as it was the essence of the whole, I was it was quite frightening, you know, bang, crash, whoosh, fizz. I wonder how they actually do that. But anyway, it was quite silly. It was a little hard right there. One girl was very badly burned. That's why it was like this. And I was called on in my capacity as and I cracked my head very sharply off a piece of furniture. It was really falls, you know, it's really like that. I'm afraid that I was very, very drunk.
Yeah, Johnny Depp's a huge Fast Show, and he was in one episode.
He was in an episode of the Fast Show with the two tailors.
Yeah. The two tailors are good.
The tailors, people who make suits.
Oh.
And they basically...
Are you taking a young lady out tonight, sir?
So the thing... Wait, the thing about the tailors, they were... It was suits you. Suit you, sir. So a man would walk into a very posh tailor's to get a new suit. And the tailors would turn up and they'd go, oh, looking for a suit, are we, sir? Oh, suit you, sir. A nice new suit. Oh, and they just become more and more suggestive, and their innuendos, you know, like, I could just see you, sir, in a nice new suit. Oh, suit you, sir.
But then it went beyond innuendo, and it'd be like, and it became overt.
Good morning, sir. How are we today, sir?
Oh, fine, thanks. How are you?
Radiant, sir. Radiant. Good. What can I do for you, sir?
I want a sort of summer suit, something light, you know.
Oh, summer suit, sir. Oh, suit you, sir. Ken, summer suit, easy drop.
Easy drop, is it?
Easy drop, Ken.
Suit you, sir.
Oh, sir will look the bee's knees in a summer suit. Oh, picture you now, sir, strolling through the park, your cream suit, fresh, crisp, flowing beautifully as you push your lady wife up against a tree and give her a jolly good seeing to.
Suit you. What'd you say there?
Give her a jolly good seeing to, sir.
Taking a piss?
There's no problem, Kenneth.
Yeah, there is a problem.
Why, sir?
Doesn't the lady want it, sir? Doesn't she want it, sir? Have you tried tying her up, sir? Suit you.
Get me the manager. I want to see the manager.
You want the manager, do you, madam?
Yes, I do.
You want me to lose my job, do you?
I don't care.
Very well, then. Mr. Hobson?
Madam's done it now, madam.
Fine.
Can I help?
Are you the manager?
Yes.
This man insulted me.
Was it done with any style?
He made an obscene suggestion regarding me and my husband.
I see. Was there by any chance a tree involved?
There was, as a matter of fact.
I see. This isn't the first time this has happened.
Oh.
Did you make these suggestions, Kenneth?
Afraid I did, sir.
Yeah, then laughing boy here suggested I tie her up.
Tie her up, sir?
Yeah.
Ooh! Tie her up! Ooh, suits you!
I think we should just put the videos on.
I think so. Swiss Tony.
Who isn't actually Swiss. That's the thing about Swiss Tony. There's nothing Swiss about him.
So, so. Let's talk about Swiss Tony and
Swiss
then we'll
Swiss Tony's the master of the...
advice.
Not,
he's
no,
giving
not
advice.
Allegory.
The simile. No, no. The simile. Like. It's like. It's a simile.
So he's runs a second-hand car dealership.
So he sells...
Swiss Tony. He's quite successful. He's got a big haircut and a big suit.
He sells second-hand
and
cars.
And he talks like that. And he goes, Paul...
So Paul is.
I see you're washing down one of the new cars there, Paul. Let me tell you, Paul. Washing a car is very much like making love to a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
First, you've got to soap her up. Then you've got to apply a layer of lacquer. And then it starts out of things that would possibly be innuendos or similes, and then it gets a bit ridiculous. And so, he always takes it too far, and then he becomes he's kind of stuck in a rut. He can't say anything else, but I see you're making a podcast there, Luke.
So the thing
Let me tell you something. Making a podcast is very much like making love to a beautiful woman. First, you've got to do the groundwork. Then you've got to do your research. Then you've got to open up with some light chat, then get down to it. See, it works for anything.
Don't spend too long at the beginning, Luke. Try and get straight to the point if you can. So the thing is with Swiss Tony is that everything is like having sex with a beautiful...
Making love.
Is like making love to a beautiful... Absolutely everything. So,
but it works for anything. I see you're painting the wall there, Luke. Let me tell you, painting a wall is very much like making love to a beautiful woman. First, you've got to choose your colour.
Then you've got to, you know, get your instrument
dip
wet.
Dip your brush.
Make sure that your instrument is wet before you start, you know.
And it's very crude, but the funny thing is he's such a likeable, stupid character. And eventually he starts to break down and he starts to realise that he's going crazy.
And he realises, wait a minute, not everything is like making love to a beautiful woman. But it's also the voice. He's very smooth.
It's the voice.
So he goes up to Paul, who is the young
the trainee.
Guy. The young trainee who's working at his car dealership. And, you know, Paul is trying to clean one of the cars. And he comes over and he goes, I see that you're cleaning a car, Paul. Cleaning a car, Paul, is a lot like making love to a beautiful woman. First, you've got to make sure that it's fully moisturized, or, you know, you've got to be prepared to do some extra work at the beginning, you know, like that sort of thing. Don't forget to, you know,
to dry off afterwards with a towel.
Yeah.
It's wide open for, like, you could do that character forever.
Yeah.
Still find it funny.
I mean, it's a bit old-fashioned, a little bit.
It is. Some of it, I think, you wouldn't do now.
You wouldn't get that sort of thing now, like a an affectionate misogynist. You know, that wouldn't happen now.
No,
misogyny isn't. There's no
room for affection in misogyny.
There's no room for affection in the portrayal of a misogynist now. But and maybe rightly so. But anyway, it was an interesting and funny character, and there were so many of these characters, and they all had memorable catchphrases.
Do I find you reading a book, Paul?
Yeah, sorry, Swiss, there were no customers, and, well, it's a guidebook. I'm going camping at the weekend.
Putting up a tent is very much like making love to a beautiful woman. Unzip the door, put up your pole, and slip into the old bag.
We have to stop now, James. We have to. Stopping a podcast, James, is a lot
very much like making love to a beautiful woman.
You got to know when enough is enough. Don't go on too long.
You've got to wind things up before the snoring starts.
When the other half is asleep, you got to know when to stop. That sort of thing.
It was Arabella Weir and what's her name?
Carolina Hearn. Yeah, but anyway, the two main guys in it were Paul Whitehouse and Charlie Higson, and Paul Whitehouse is an amazing comedian, and yeah, Johnny Depp at one point said that Paul Whitehouse was his favourite actor in the world. And this is, I mean, Johnny Depp these days is, again, not...
Has he been cancelled yet?
He's sort of been cancelled. He's not as good as he used to be. He seems to be sort of in having a hard time. Maybe drinks too much. I don't know. But he's not what he used to be, Johnny Depp. But there was a period when Johnny Depp was the coolest and greatest actor in Hollywood before he did the Pirates of the Caribbean films. You know, he was the benchmark of taste and class and cool. And he said The Fast Show was his favourite show and that Paul Whitehouse was his favourite actor. Okay, James, thank you for telling us about these five British or English things.
What time are we on? 1.5 hours.
An hour and 26 minutes. I'll be editing some bits out. But thank you for talking to us. Ladies and gents, we just hope that this has been of some value to you as
Maybe
ever.
Maybe 1 out of 5 you might like.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all we can hope. Remember, all we hoped for was a
Yeah.
So I hope we've achieved a or a
And maybe one person out there has gone, I'll check out the Fast Show. What?
That's creepy. The way you do the false, the twiddling the invisible moustache, I find is a bit weird.
Okay. Well, maybe.
I think we just aim for a
Okay.
Well, that's a sort of non-committal one.
How would they write that in the comment section?
I think H apostrophe M M M M M M.
H apostrophe M M. Just two M's.
Okay. No, that's I think the longer the M, the more number of M's, the more interesting. So if you think this was crap, just don't write anything.
Thank you, James, for talking to us another late evening, late night. Okay.
Well, I just have to say one thing. Buono estente.
Oh, there you go again, another
that was
thing
a Channel 9 thing. What does that even mean?
It's from The Fast Show. It doesn't mean anything. It's just one of those things, a catchphrase from The Fast Show that none of them will know.
What's another catchphrase? Oh, one last thing for me to say. You ain't seen me, right?
You ain't seen me, right? Another thing from The Fast Show that they won't know. Like, please end on something that they will at least understand so they can feel kind of good about themselves.
All right, thanks for listening. Good night.
It might not be the night, it might be the morning.
Oh, you're always flipping saying that.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Have a good time.
Hope you are relatively happy.
So there you go. Plenty of stuff to check out, including interviews with Alan Moore, Viz Comics, which you can get from the local shop if you're in the UK, The Fast Show with some videos online, books by Jake Arnott. All that remains to be said here is thanks to James for appearing in another episode. The next one is going to be with my dad, and he's picked 3 quintessentially British things. Then my mum will be on the podcast with her 3 choices. Thank you as ever for listening, and I'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. But for now, it's just time to say goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humor and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project
possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.